Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Mon Hotep to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. Well, tonight's program is going to be, I think, pretty interesting, as most of our programs are. But, you know, we are really gearing up for some very, very wonderful and powerful things, family. I'm telling you, I just got back in. That's why I was about 5 minutes late getting on tonight, because I just got back in from our community and media briefing for the Million Woman World March. And I'm telling you, things are moving forward as they should be. And it's pretty interesting to kind of see and hear some of what our people are saying in terms of their support. I was hoping more people would have came on today, if nothing else, just to give their support. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm watching very, very carefully because, you know, at this stage of the game, folks are either going to step up or step off. And so either way, it's fine with me because we have a plan that we know is foolproof. At least to a great extent, because our ancestors pretty much gave it to us to do. So, needless to say, it's going to be very interesting. Now, today, for our session, I indicated that MWM is definitely more than just a march. So for folks, because you already know, once people start getting the word that, oh, the Million Woman March is going to do a Million Woman World March, and, you know, you're going to already get these naysayers and other kinds of things, and it's okay. It really is, because at this stage of the game, we kind of know how that goes, that particularly when folks are not doing what they really either can be doing or should be doing, they're going to find some fault with what you're doing. And so we're really prepared for that because we're making it very clear right up front that the Million Woman March is about our sisters globally, right? That has not been done before, at least not to any great extent. Also, in doing that, to really build and develop the type of operations and mechanisms that is going to make a difference in our communities. So what does that mean? We talked today or this evening about land. Now, isn't that what Brother Malcolm and others taught us, Baba Mario Badelli and others taught us? Land. So we're not talking about, again, just coming together, and, I mean, that's wonderful. We're going to commemorate and celebrate our great ancestors, our history, our cultures. We're going to do that and raise up the mother of civilization positively and universally. We're going to do that. But what does that also enable us to do? Organize, organize, organize. Oh, yeah. Mobilize, mobilize, mobilize. Of course it does. And it should. And so this is what the Million Woman World March is going to enable us to do. You see, and it's really a wonderful blessing to now see our people begin to come together in support of this. And they should, needless to say, because we do have an action plan that this gathering will enable us to implement the action plan in such a way that it literally will allow us to move some things in our community throughout the U.S. and, needless to say, throughout the diaspora. So, again, without going into a lot of what we talked about today, I just want to say this. This is a three-year operation. This year kicks off here in the U.S. / North America. Next year, we plan to be in one of the capital countries. And then the third year, 2025, we plan to do the Million Woman World March in Africa. So as you can tell, this is not about just an event. It's a very strategic mode of operations. And we learned a lot. I mean, we've had failures, needless to say. We've had saboteurs, needless to say. and a whole bunch of other stuff, as others have in developing their movement, nation, and so forth. So we don't feel, too badly, because some things go with the territory. And so with that said, we recognize and realize that we had to go through growing pains to bring this movement forward. And so we have. So with that said, family, again, we want to thank all of you for tuning into this segment of New Day. We are now in our 14th year straight. Straight. Nonstop also. And independent. Never having a grant, never having corporate sponsoring. So now we really are reaching out to you, our people, to help us to grow and develop, particularly when it comes now to the Million Woman World March. So before we bring in our guests for tonight, and I say guests only in the context of extended family, because I don't really like that phrase or that concept of guests. No, we're talking about extended family. We're going to talk very shortly with the brother that I had the opportunity to kind of spend a couple of hours talking to. That wasn't what we thought we were going to do initially, but, it was all good, to say the least. And so we're going to talk with our brother, Charles Mitchell. And also, I'm going to find this African name for you in a minute. But it is interesting how in this thing and age, other folks still want to steal our stuff, and not just steal our stuff, but create so many different kinds of illusions. And by the way, we had that with the Million Woman March too. I mean, for a while I had a female talking about she was the mother of the Million Woman March, and I didn't know who that woman was until, we were way, way down the road in organizing, and she decided that because she wanted to do something like that, she was telling people in Atlanta that she was the mother of the Million Woman March. But anyway, I sidetracked. That's a whole other conversation. The point is, when we talked with our brothers tonight, we're going to talk about what's really going on with this European, and that puts it mildly, attack on our people from a historical perspective. Now, I'm sure some of you have seen, if not all of you have seen, the series that Jada Pinkett Smith is doing that focuses on African queens. And clearly they are not white, blissfully. And so there's been a lot of, crazy stuff going on around that, particularly with this last one of Cleopatra, because Arab and other folks have been claiming, Cleopatra for quite a while. And so now apparently they have upped their game in, asserting certain kinds of ideas. And see, normally we don't really care as much, but first of all, we're kind of sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we have our children and the next generations to think about. And so we have got to protect our history in every way possible. Again, some of the stuff is not necessarily, the information that we want to struggle a whole lot about, some of the things you've heard or whatever, but some of the stuff is. So at any rate, we're going to talk about that tonight, family. But also, how can we keep letting this happen? And what I mean by that is we have, of course, numerous scholars and historians, which, by the way, a couple of them wrote something about the Million Women March, and guess what? Totally incorrect. Never interviewed me, but that's a whole other story. The point is we have a variety of historians and scholars, and so for us to create the kinds of institutions that enables us to fight even better should be something that we need to be looking at for the future. Because we definitely got the folk, ain't no doubt about it. We have the material, we have the books, we have reports, we have research, but do not have institutions. And this is one of the conversations that we had earlier today about institution building. So with that said, we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and we are going to talk with a brother who, again, I had the opportunity to speak with last evening for quite a while, actually. And it was a very, very good conversation, needless to say. But also, family, he's also going to bring in another brother, I believe Brother Imhotep is his name. I think I do see both of them in queue. And so what I think I'm going to do is, hold on one moment, I got to make sure I have the right member there. Okay, let me just check some of the family because I do see them in queue, but I also want to check something. But anyway, family, I want you all to get ready for this conversation because it is really very, very important that we begin to strategize to a greater extent. These brothers and sister, I think a sister is going to be joining us also, but they're doing an excellent, excellent job in, you know, fighting back. There's a petition that has been put out there, and there are certainly demonstrations or rallies or what have you. And, you know, we need to support. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in Brother Charles Mitchell, and he's going to tell us a bit about himself and also the project. And I'm going to find the other number to bring in Brother Imhotep, and then we're going to get this conversation rocking and rolling. So without further ado, let's bring in Brother Mitchell. And greetings to you, my brother. How are you tonight?
Greetings, Empress. How are you? I am wonderful. We had quite a full day, and one of my godsons has been helping me do a moving job today with for another sister in the community. He is knocked out, so I hope I can wake him up because I want him to hear what's going on in the community and know that we are out here working not for ourselves but for the youth, and that the youth understand, so that he understands as a young man that he needs at some point to pick up the torch and carry it on. So we can't be waiting for these people to turn 20 and 30 and 40 years old before we give them the reins of leadership.
No, that's right. What is
Which
the brother's
is what,
name?
One of the things we were talking about. His name is Menelik.
Right. Oh, wow.
His mom named him after great emperor of Ethiopia.
Yes, yes, wonderful.
So he has powerful memory, and his little brother name is Heru.
Oh,
so, my godson, that's a powerful name.
I know that's right. Oh, my goodness. Wonderful. So, brother, before we bring in Brother Imhotep, just share with our family a little bit about you, and then we're going to get into the dialogue.
Well, born and raised in Brooklyn, currently still live in Brooklyn, long-term Brooklynite, long-term black nationalist, pan-Africanist. Malcolm was the person who, for me, like many others, who in his lifetime and after his lifetime, Malcolm inspired me to search further, which led me to Gary Bird Show. And Dr. Linda Jeffries was on Gary Bird's show one day. You know, that's the days when he used to be at the Apollo Theater Live and you could just walk in and sit down. You could just walk in and sit down and partake of the rich information that was being shared. And then that led me to, you know, Dr. J at the time had an African community education class that was opening up City College to the public. And I, from there on, joined the Sons of Africa, and it's been a wrap ever since. I've worked with the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee to educate people about Malcolm's legacy and raise funds for our political prisoners. I worked under Sekou Owusu when he was alive, Ibaye, I should say, right there, because he passed away. But he brought me into the RNA to help with a Nation Day programming, and one election, I was the one of the three election commissioners, just counting the votes for the election, and I helped him when he was the president, you know, of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. Since then, I work with young people in our community. I work with young people doing tutoring here and there. I worked with the OAAU and Professor Small, who's also at that time was at City College, Dr. J, mm-hmm. Professor Small, Professor Edward Scobie Ibaye were defining manhood for me. They helped me and my big brother, Reggie Mabry, who was our media trainer, define what manhood was for me. And, you know, at that time also, I'm sure your audience remembers Menelik, call your mother. Menelik, wake up, boy. Excuse me. But, yes, at that time, Dr. J was under attack. And so we had to help protect him against the militant wing of the ADL, the Kahani Kai.
Right.
And but even before all of that, I was a student helping to keep tuition affordable or fighting to keep tuition affordable at CUNY, CUNY, the City University of New York. You have to put it on mute. Excuse me. But so I've been in this a long time trying to lift myself up, lift my people up, and I really want these young people to know that you are the leaders that you've been looking for. Don't look for people you're looking at as leaders had the answers, they would have been solved it a long time ago. But all of us collectively are the leaders that we've been looking for, and we have the brain power, we have the ancestors with us, and we can bring any solutions that we need. We just have to believe in the righteousness and the victory of our struggle, as somebody from the West Coast, our great elder, says, Malana Karenga. As Malana Karenga says, we have to believe in the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And I know, just like you know, Empress, that the ancestors are always with us and guiding us, and the Creator and the Risha and all the Netcha, the Abosum, they all with us, and they just waiting for us to take our victory.
Ashe, ashe. And you know, it's interesting that you said that, brother, because I had a session earlier today, and one of the things that I realized is that, you know, I don't know if you want to call it ancestors, creator, or whatever, but something's getting really tired of our nonsense. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's some stuff that, of course, we can't, I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's not that we're not trying to, you know, to deal with it or do something about it. But then there's some other stuff that is just crazy. And I think something is like going, yo, y'all, if you think you're going to keep doing that and getting away with it, you got another thing coming. You see, and so we better really see the writing on the wall, because after 100 years, and I think we kind of had this conversation in our last dialogue, but it's been, you know, what I said to people earlier today, brother, was I'm looking to get 1 million members, at least. The Honorable Marcus Garvey showed us that it can be done 100 years ago. So I'm not tolerating.
And without social media or all of that.
Exactly. So for me, it's like a wrap. It's like, oh, no. There's no way that I could sit by and not at least make an effort to accomplish that, you see. And we need to do that, because we need to be in a mode of strength, actively involved. I mean, I don't expect 1 million members to all be active, but to at least put forth the effort to be involved in something is important. So, you know, anyway,
yes,
I digress. But my brother, thank
you
so
much. But
you
know what? We all can be active, Mama. Mama Empress, we all can be active, because everybody can't be out on the battlefront. That's clear. We got children to take care of. We got responsibilities. You know, people got to take care of elders or whatever. But we need to pool our resources. What do I mean by that? Some of us should be being paid, you know, not paid, but, you know, our needs. Some of us want to be on the front line. So those who want to be on the front line, we should make sure that their bills and everything is paid, so that they don't have to come home and then worry about it. And those who, whose talents are best at taking care of children and educating children, let those folks do that. There are folks who, for whatever reason, don't feel comfortable doing all that, so they just want to get a job. Fine, you have a job or you have a business. Contribute your money like an A.G. Gaston to the struggle. You can stay behind the scenes because you can work with the enemy and come back and report to us what the enemy is doing. We all have a role to play. Everybody can't be a Malcolm or you know, Ella Baker or whatever, but we all got a price. We all got something we can contribute.
That's right. That's right. And brother, you know, you're so on point because, again, one of the things that we talked about earlier today was, you know, I created now for the Million Woman World March the Million Woman Party. And so it's not to try to compete with the Democrat or the Green or the Republic or whatever else is out there. It's geared primarily to educate and to recruit and to train and so forth. We don't care nothing about the parties per se. We need to develop our own agenda. And in the local arenas, and this goes to what you were saying, see, here in Philly, as in other cities, there are elected offices. And again, what we have to begin to do is put our own people in some of these positions, and like you said, to be able to provide us with information, if nothing else. But then you have to deal with that strategically, to recruit people who are going to uphold your agenda. Because, see, our position is we're going to put money in your campaign. Because what we don't realize is we think if a person is black and they get in office that they're going to do something for us. Well, guess what? They have an obligation to the party. They will service the constituent, but they're doing that when they provide the constituent with information and so forth. So unless you are putting money into their campaign or into something else they're doing, guess what? You're not going to get the full deal. So my point is we have to ask ourselves, are we literally putting folks in office other than just voting? Are we literally putting up money for their campaigns? Because if we're not doing that, we're not going to get the other stuff that other folks be getting. See, so that's why now with the Million Woman Party, we'll be able to provide what we call Poli-Sci 101. So folks can kind of get a real understanding of how this stuff really works. And we can put our people in office, not because we believe in any of that, y'all. Let me be real clear about that. But strategically, we need people internally who can keep an eye out, an ear out, and so forth. Anyway. Moving right along. Y'all get the idea. This is what we talked about earlier today with the Million Woman World. You know, and that's what we're talking about. So with that said, okay, I do see Brother Imhotep in queue. So we're going to get ready to bring him in and talk with him about a couple of things. Of course, he is the director of the Center for the Pan-African Studies in Detroit. Oh, Detroit is one of my sister cities. I can't wait to talk with him because I'll be going on tour. Yeah. Oh, we had seven. We got 10 sister cities. And so we plan to buy property and to open some kind of institution in every one of our sister cities. You see?
So all right, now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. This is not just about A-Mark, believe me. It's about maneuvering. But anyway, let's bring our brother in and let's get down with what we need to talk about for this evening, and that is, of course, the fight, the struggle to make sure that these people are not able to get away with, at least not as easily, in plagiarizing and misrepresenting our history and culture. Greetings to you, Brother Imhotep. How are you this evening?
Greetings. I'm doing fine.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a pleasure. And I'd just like to thank you for allowing me to be on your platform, and I admire your ideals of what you're doing, especially with the Million Woman March platform that you have been pretty much spearheading for years. And, you know, at a distance, I have to admire you, and I would, you know, love to join you in that effort.
Oh, well, brother, consider it done. Again, one of the things we did today was begin to activate our brothers. We have a team, a cadre within MWM, and it's called Serious Brothers in Support. And Sirius, of course, is spelled S-I-R-I-U-S. And this is our brotherhood component. And we talked about that tonight, earlier today. And so I'll definitely make sure you get information because we want our brothers to know, even though sisters are taking the lead on some things, it's never a separation. It's always about family and community. And brothers do have a very specific role. Of course, security, transportation. But then after the event, we are expecting our brothers to develop programs because a lot of our women have sons and nephews and grandsons and brothers. And so we need our men to develop programming, et cetera, initiatives for them. You see, so we'll tell you more about that later, but the bottom line is you're recruited now, so you're good.
Yeah. I'm
so
ready.
Tell us
I'm
more.
Ready. Fresh. I'm ready. When you said serious, that really made me ready. You know, I've been a serious brother, all my life, and I like to work with other serious people because, as I tell people, this is really not a game. This is, this is sometimes a life or death situation. Our children's future is at hand, so we need serious people.
That's right.
Because we can't
That's
have
right.
people who are not serious and taking a cavalier attitude about our struggle. And when you have type of attitudes like that, we can't afford to become an out there like we playing pity pat. We're dealing with people
right.
who want to annihilate us, who want to erase us, even actually the topic, they want to take our history and erase us out of our own history. So this is very serious, and only real people, not just
uh-huh.
men but women, have to be involved in the struggle, because if you're not serious, you're going to fall apart and start hiding
That's
behind
right.
trees like we saw a lot of people when we're dealing with Hawaii.
Okay. So speaking of that, I want you to hold that point real quick and just let folks know what you do in Detroit, and then we're going to go into what you just said.
Well, I do a multitude of things. The most important thing I do is I love our people in Detroit, not just in
mm-hmm.
Detroit, Brooklyn. I live in Philly, Washington, D.C. I just really try to spread a lot of love and concern and caring about the people in Detroit, and I try to mobilize them to try to really take control of their neighborhoods that they live in, because, Detroit is over 80% people of African descent, yet 94% of all the wealth and income goes to people who are non-black. So I've been here pretty much fighting on all fronts, particularly
mm-hmm.
on the educational front, to try to get our people to wake up and realize that we are a wealthy people, not just in spirit, but well as in material things. It's just the fact that we don't know how to pull ourselves together. We don't have a Pan-African philosophy that give us the maturity, the emotional maturity to come together and take advantage of our numerical advantage. So I've been doing a lot of many things in Detroit, and they kind of feel me, my presence.
Mm-hmm. Mhm. I know that's right. Well, I'm loving it. And I'm going to tell you briefly, I can't wait to really sit down and talk with you. I haven't been to Detroit in about a year now, but I have a brother there, Brother Darrell Jordan. I don't know if you know him. And, of course, I know Brother Malik that does the farming and stuff. So we got some serious plans for coming to Detroit. But, the thing that we've done in terms of Detroit in doing some research on the gentrification there. We call Detroit ground zero, meaning for us it is one of the first cities that really, where gentrification really, really went into effect. And so, definitely want to talk more with you about that because we have plans of action to file lawsuits against some of these cities and get some of these properties back. Okay, but I'll give you more information and insight into that at another time. But now let's move on with what's going on, the project or the initiative that you and our brother and others are now dealing with. Tell us about what's going on with the fight to make certain other people are not able to, at least not easily able to steal our stuff.
Let me start. So some time ago, you know, I periodically search the internet and see what's going on, especially since last year we had there's an excellent film called Happy, H-A-P-I, and they had a tour that we were supposed to go to in February. And so as part of that tour, we were supposed to have an African look at Kemet. I mean, the tour was to Kemet with, you know, Egypt. And as part of that, we were supposed to have a 1 or 2 day conference there. We turned around, and in social media, there's a group allegedly of young Egyptians that's been pushing back against what they deem the Afrocentric movement, a.k.a. black folks here in America primarily. And so they created such an environment online that we felt that it actually was a safety risk, and actually people on the ground were saying that it was a safety risk. So we wound up postponing that conference to later on in the year, to May, to the end of May, the beginning of June. And in the conference, we actually had it in Detroit. It was a fantastic conference, the Happy One Africa Conference. And that was a great success over the last weekend, I think it was, of April. Brother Imhotep and myself and many others came from all over the country to participate. But there's an environment in Kemet that is so anti-African that they can look at images of Narmer and Mentuhotep and Queen T and Akhenaten and so many others and say that they appear to be black, but they are not black, and they're certainly not connected to the Sudan Africans, to the Congo Africans, and definitely not to the West African Africans, and definitely not to the African Americans. So this is what led me. I was looking online to see what was going on, you know, in the aftermath of everything that we went through. I could come on another time and tell you what I saw on the actual trip, but I was just looking for things related to what was going on, you know, in the social media with these, because I'm not even sure, really, honestly, that it might be young people, young Egyptians. It could be Mossad or it could be American intelligence. We don't know who it actually is. But on the face, it says Egyptians for Egypt. Mm. Anyway, so I was looking and I saw that Hawass was having a tour of America. So I said this to Brother Imhotep and some of the elders, some of the people in AFCAC and UNIA, and nobody said anything except for one strong black man in Detroit named Imhotep. And so Imhotep was infuriated. And so I'm going to let him take over here and let him tell you what he did.
Okay.
Well, thanks. You did a great job of, you know, creating a backdrop to what I was going to say. What happened is, you know, I get a call in my office at the Center for Pan-African Studies from the actual organizer of that conference over there in Kemet. And they were pretty much lamenting the fact that they were pretty much bullied out of Kemet. And the sad thing about this is that they told me nobody else wanted to speak up about it because I was a political science, you know, I'm a political scientist, a Pan-African political scientist. They said, you know, Imhotep, what can you do for us? So what happened is when they told me that, I was infuriated to hear that people of African descent, scholars, were being pushed out pretty much of their own homeland because Kemet actually belongs to us. You know, that's another issue there. So I got on it, and so it happened. I wanted to find out who was behind all this. And the name started ringing bells throughout online. His name was Dr. Zahi Hawass. Uh-huh. By the time I found that out, I get a call from Brother Asukile, who's a good friend of mine, you know, way before this Hawass situation. And he showed me that the guy so happened to be going on a 23-city tour in the United States. So I wrote an article sounding alarm bell and alerting all the scholars and activists that we got the most anti-African scholar coming through our neighborhoods telling our people that the people who founded ancient Egypt weren't black people, which is a major assault, a major offense. So I wrote the article and it gained traction and, you know, people start spreading and then we start showing up, you know, doing protests. But I want to make a bigger observation, and that is, as you said, Empress, it's much bigger than Cleopatra. This
sure.
is about power. This is about power and control. And we have some Arab Egyptian nationalists who feel that this is the right time for themselves to assert themselves over us using our history, because they know that our great leaders like Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, Francis Cress Wilson, they know they're not here now. So they feel that we're vulnerable. This is why you have them coming in of all places, Chicago, L.A., New York, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Miami, Atlanta, in cities that substantially have black population. So I took that personal, and all the time, that as Dr. Clark said this, if you do not control the narrative of your history, eventually you can be susceptible to be re-enslaved again. So this mm-hmm. is very important for us to oppose, not just Zahi Hawass, but even Governor Ron DeSantis, who is attacking black studies. So I try to tell people that it is imperative upon us to protect and preserve our history from anybody, whatever race or ethnicity they are from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So with that said, there seems to be a escalated effort, for lack of a better word, to create this illusion or this misinformation. Is that safe to say?
Yes, there's been a major escalation in this
mm-hmm.
because there are some pushback towards them.
Mm-hmm.
Hawass, I mean, we have been so successful, and I want to give a shout out to Sister Nzinga there in New Jersey City, who has always been of much help to myself and other people. But Hawass is filling us because we're not just yelling outside. We're going to his venue and giving his attendees literature to read by Charles Finch, Dr. Ben. We're going right in there with him. And he's filling us, and you go on his website, you'll see him respond. But, yes, things have been accelerating. We've seen Kevin Hart, he's been barred from going to Egypt just because he told a group of children that their ancestors were kings and queens in Egypt.
Right.
So he can't
right.
never come over there. They have ratcheted up their attack on our history. But the question is, it's not what they're going to do. What are we going to do about it?
Right.
Are we not going to say anything because we got tourist businesses over there in Kemet? Are we going to make excuses and not do anything? That's the thing, because I'm going to tell you this. Hawass and his people got over 250,000 signatures within days about the Cleopatra issue.
Netflix documentary.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That quick. And we got
250.
Wow.
But how many signatures does it take for us in our petition to try to revolt, get his PhD revoked? There's no comparison. So Hawass, them see, as a brother told me when I told him what I was doing, he said, Hawass is doing this, he said, because Dennis, Hawass know you only got a few people. You know black people
right.
don't come together on serious issues.
Right.
So Hawass,
right.
he's coming to Detroit. He's not scared. So it's on us how we're going to respond, because there's a lot at stake.
So I'm so glad to hear this, because, again, this is why we're going to demonstrate, or shall we say, give some examples about how to strategize and connect the black dots. So we're at home now launching this phase with what we call Boots on the Ground for the Million Woman World March. So I certainly am interested in having that ad, meaning the petition that you now have available, and anything else that is relevant to exposing and lessening this whatever we want to call it. So my point is, as we proceed, certainly this will be something that we want to present to folks as they're coming in and organizing, because ultimately MWWM is going to become a major force within the next couple of months. And so here's something that we can give to the people that they can do right now. What do you think about that?
Well, Oscar Keeley, you wanted to take a stab?
I think it's an excellent idea. I mean, what you said earlier, Empress, was very important. But you said we're not really interested in partaking in their government as it exists. But
right.
Government, we created government. So why would we not be interested in government? We understand, as taught to us by our scholar, Dr. Linda Jeffries, politics, economics, and culture. Economics is the management of your economy. Politics is the social management, the interaction between groups and organizations and communities to make things happen, to take care of the economics. And then the culture,
right. The
culture in his pyramid analysis is at the top. But the culture is really the foundation, because the culture is how you think. The culture is your ideas and all. And so we have to think. See, as the last time I looked, we had 1,053 signatures on that petition against Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have people
okay. All
over the world that ascribe to being African, that ascribe to Afrocentrism or whatever. We should have way more signatures than that. You
okay.
know. Hawass represents, just like earlier today, the Brother Imhotep and I and Sister Nzinga posed that we need to push for Henry Louis Gates to make a comment. But Henry Louis Gates is the African-American, so-called African-American, equivalent to Hawass. He's a gatekeeper to the knowledge and anti-intellectualism and dishonesty that exists. He goes to Africa as a tourist. He don't see his brothers and sisters. He don't see people in struggle that he needs to make a documentary on, right? Just like some of our people go on tours, and they don't say a damn word about the Nubians, the original Egyptians that are suffering there. And it's
true. Right.
I'm going to make
That's
sure
right.
that I use every platform I get. The Nubians are existing in an apartheid state in Egypt. They have no
That's
representation
right.
in the government. And there's an $8 to $13 billion industry in tourism, and they get crumbs from the table. All
That's
they
right.
do is offer rides, and they took prairies across up and down the Nile River, or the particular case that I think of. I went to Elephantine. We had a hotel on Elephantine Island, and I was invited to one of the elders there working at the ferry. He invited me to his house for tea. Through him and through other elders in the community, I heard the story of how, you know, he showed me photo album in the beach, or the beach that they used to, as when he was a youth, the beach that they used to be on is now where the hotel is. And he explained to me that the indigenous leadership made concessions with the people that developed the hotel, that they would give them the land in return for jobs when the hotel is open. Now, the only Nubian
right.
I saw that at the hotel was the brother that's doing security down by the, when you come off the ferry across from Aswan to the hotel. That's the only Nubian I saw. Everybody else was a mix of Arabs and Turkish and you know, what we would call the mulattoes.
Right.
So they lied
you know.
To them. They're boxing them out of the Egyptian economy. The people, I mean, they may have meager expenses, But there's at least $8 billion tourism industry, and they have no significant part of that. They have no representation in the government. This is what we was fighting against in the 70s and 80s with apartheid. With that,
right.
You and I talked. You were fighting for Sister Mandela, who represented herself, the women of South Africa, the youth of South Africa. This is a modern-day apartheid struggle that every African person should be outraged about. I mean, we got other stuff, Sudan, North Sudan, South Sudan as well, that we need to talk about. But this is something that nobody is talking about, and they need to. So those are original Egyptians, as well as anybody that might have migrated.
This is why, and we talked about this briefly as well, but I have to say it now because our people need to hear some of what, myself and a few others have actually been doing in these past couple of years. And so here it is. So from a strategic standpoint, this is why the Million Women World March is positioned in the manner that it is. Because when we talk about certain issues, it really behooves us to examine how can we possibly help, support, or whatever. Just as we did with South Africa, Azania. Black folks was definitely doing a bunch of stuff to help fight the apartheid system there. So with what you just said, obviously, and this has been over a few years with the FAR and other situations, you're right. Black folks, Africans here in the U.S. should be doing something. Now, what is that something? Well, without going into detail at this time, I will say this. The women. See, as women, we have a capability to connect with other women. You see, and I don't understand. This is what we were talking about the other night, but I don't understand what part of this folks don't get or understand or want to understand that the black woman here in the U.S. is a powerful weapon. We're one of the most best kept secrets.
The black woman everywhere.
Right, mm-hmm. But I'm saying
black woman everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But I'm saying in this particular situation, it would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
For some women here to develop something that is not threatening, but will allow there to be an interaction and engagement from a international diplomatic standpoint. And then it would enable us to determine what else can we possibly do. You see, so I just want to put that out there to folks so folks can stop playing. And stop trying to make it seem when sisters make some moves that, they. And this is what I've run into over the years. Oh, yeah, they won't march. Well, they're just copying off of the brothers. And I'm like, what? But anyway, I digress. So yeah, I'm glad you raised that point because, when we talk about issues, we have to now be holistic and make certain that we're looking at all of our people in every way that we can at this point in time in terms of evaluating strategy and struggle. So with that said, okay. So family, listen. So what can our folks do in regards to the campaign that you and Brother Imhotep now have? 1,000 signatures, that's embarrassing and is unacceptable. So what is it that we can now do to move this thing forward? Or what else?
The next and last action that we're going to have is Hawass will be next week on the 30th in Boston. So we're trying to organize people to show up in Boston to make our voices heard. And they don't really have to do any yelling. People think protest and they think about yelling and carrying on and disturbing the thing. What we've been doing is we are going there, to make our presence felt and let him know. And he's had to write about it on his little website. He has a website, ZahiHawass.com. You open it up, and he's got his little cute picture with his Indiana Jones hat. He calls himself the man with the hat. He thinks he's a real life Indiana Jones. Now picture that. He's modeling himself after a cracker. And so he calls for the man, but he had to, even though his write-up was horrible, his write-up was like a less than a sixth grade education person that wrote it, and he's supposed to be a doctorate. And he's written that blacks are showing up at different locations, three cities in California, Detroit, and New York. So we want to make sure that we send him home with his hat and his tail between his legs from Boston. I think Boston is the last stop in Motep on his presence known. And if you can't actually be there physically, we have people that would like to go there physically. So you can get in touch with myself or MOTEP if you'd like to make a donation to make that possible. But also, we want you all to go to change.org and look for the petition against Zahi Hawass. And our sister, I'll text you or email you that petition link so people can respond directly through that. But more importantly, we challenge you to go to those people that you consider leaders in your community and talk about what he's doing, because Zahi Hawass represents the intellectual dishonesty that exists still to this day, that Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and J.A. Rogers and Chancellor Williams and John Jackson and Shashi McIntyre and Jacob Carruthers and Asa Hilliard and others were fighting against. The intellectual dishonesty that made Dr. John Henry Clark pull all the people of African descent out of the African Studies Association and create the African Heritage Studies Association. The intellectual dishonesty that made Dr. Clark and Dr. Jeffries and Jacob Carruthers and Milana Kamanga and others create ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, to create study groups, not in academia, but to put it in our homes, to create study groups in our churches, to create study groups in our community centers. So I want you all to challenge the leadership, NAACP, and even ASCAC, African Heritage Studies Association, and the National National Black Studies Council, and all of our organizations, the social workers. I want you to challenge them to address the intellectual dishonesty of Hawass on this issue, but also to start talking, because the ancestors, as you were saying, the ancestors are pushing us. The ancestors expect better of us. The things that they went through, we have never had to go through. We've never had to experience walking down the street and getting charged with vagrancy and then forced to work on a plantation. I was watching a movie, Honey Dripper, last night with what's our brother's name? Our elder master actor. He was in Lethal Weapon. What's his name?
Sam Jackson.
Danny Glover. Danny Glover, and the young man walking down the street in the South, and the racist cracker sheriff. He's looking for work. The racist cracker sheriff stops him and said, charges him with vagrancy, and then takes him to the white man's plantation without a trial, finds him guilty. And then the man asked him, how much you going to charge? And he told him like $40, $50 a day. Not to pay the young man for his work, to pay the sheriff for his work.
Right.
And so when we talk about prison convict leasing, and the prison-to-school pipeline, that's what our ancestors went through. The prison, the end thing, the school-to-prison pipeline is not even half of what our ancestors had to experience. So the ancestors are coming up out of the ground or coming spiritually. And these young men and women that are getting murdered day after day after day, these are sacrifices for our people. This is blood being shed for our people because we still have not learned the lesson. We still have not picked up the struggle in the way that we need to pick it up. And so the ancestors are speaking to us. We are the best of the best. In those dungeons, when they took us to the dungeons in Elmina and Cape Coast, they had a male dungeon, which everybody talks about. They had a female dungeon, which everybody talks about. But guess what? They also had a leader's dungeon. Ballroom authorized of the male and the female dungeons with a slot that they could open and close and shove water, food in, that was maybe 3 inches high by 4 to 6 inches across. And when that was open, that was the only fresh air. That was the only light. And those are the ancestors that they saw was going to be the quote-unquote troublemakers, the potential leaders of an insurrection. And they put them in a separate room hoping to kill them off. But they didn't. And those ancestors are your and my ancestors. We are leaders. We are the strength that our people need. And we need to stand up and see our strength. We need to look in the mirror and see who we really are. We are our ancestors manifested again in this time to be the leaders for our people. And we need to understand who and what we are spiritually and physically and mentally and all the other needs. Our people need us. Our children are in these streets dying because we have not done what we're supposed to do. So y'all need to go. Family that's listening, y'all need to step to the people that are so-called leaders and challenge them to step up in the way that our people need them to step up in order to not just survive, but to...
That's right. Yes,
I would just like to mention real quick.
Go ahead, my brother.
We got sister, a powerful sister, Professor Nubia waiting in the come in. I think she's supposed to be a part of it. And I know your audience will probably be thrilled to hear her. She's been waiting and she's in there. I don't know if you guys knew or not. She's waiting. She's a powerful sister, Professor Nubia. She's waiting there. And we had told her she was going to be a part of the discussion. She's an expert in ancient Kemet history.
Okay, I'm going to bring her in. I wish I had known early for certain that she was coming in, but I think I might see her here. Let me check to see. Caller, you're at 7207. I'm not sure if this is the sister that the brother's talking
me.
About. All right. Greetings to you, my sister.
Greetings. So glad to be here and in this discussion because it's just so vital, all the things that you've been discussing about the history, about the whitewashing of our history. It's just so vital that all of you all are coming together to discuss this because it's an atrocity that continues to happen. And if we don't address this as a people, it will continue to happen. They will continue to say that our contributions haven't been valued, our contributions didn't exist. I mean, it's far worse than being valued. They have taken the identity and changed it into an identity that is non-African. And so it's just very important. And saying also that Africans, that the Africans in Egypt that we know are Africans, they're saying are Caucasian, are not related to the people in the United States and in the diaspora, which is 100% incorrect. 100% incorrect. There are professors that have studied that connection from Sheikh Anta Diop onto Salim Faraji and others. Solange Ashby. Dr. Deborah Hurd, or soon to be Dr. Deborah Hurd, and others that have documented Anderson Thompson, Leonard Jeffries, have documented the connections. And now there's nothing else to do but to get your DNA test. If you don't understand that these people are the same people that fled over the years, over the 3,000 years invasions, little by little, our people traveled across to West Africa and reestablished cultures, and you can tell the cultural connection by the ritual and the tradition. So this discussion has been very, 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 very enlightening, as well as, I learned some things, too, from the other people that are discussing. It's not only, scholars don't have all of the information. We learn information from these kind of platforms, as you know, that we discuss.
All right, Ashe. Sister, tell me your name again, please.
My name is Sister Nubia Mornike, and I am a Kushologist. I research in ancient Kush. I do archaeology in ancient Kush and beliefs, as well as underwater archaeology and African-American archaeology, as well as archaeology in the Caribbean. So it is very, it is very important that we make these connections and understand that these kind of deletions, efforts or deletions from us being connected with that history, you know, this is one of the ways that they try to rewrite history. And if it's only their narrative, it's going to be the narrative of the lion hunter, and the lions won't have their story.
Right, right. Ashe. Well, sister, I'm very, very thankful that you have joined us. And I'm looking forward to talking with you at another time, because I'm just going to say this, and then we're going to get ready to wrap up because our second guest, I think, is ready. But I want to bring you all back. Now, tell me again first, when is the last tour to Boston? When is that scheduled again?
June 30th. You can see the details at the Center for Pan-African Studies.org, and they'll give you all the details and updates on his Hawassan schedule.
Okay, so can I get you all back next Saturday to give us the update report, because you're going to be there that day, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you can give me an update. We'll do part two next week, and of course that will include, now what I'm going to do tomorrow, a brother who came on our call earlier who has given support for the Million Woman World March is Brother Sadiki Cambone, and he has the Nubian Circle in Boston.
Uh-huh.
His book is called The Nubian Leadership Circle in Boston.
Oh, cool.
All right. That's what's
you
up.
To connect with him. Absolutely.
So, Sister Empress, I also want to say, because if I didn't say it, I would be whiteballed. I am also the liaison for the New York State Local Coordinator Committee for the Pan-African Settlers Movement. And I would love for you, working on this side, to be a part of that. And what the Pan-African Settlers Movement is calling for an African federated state on the continent by the year 2030, a federated government for African people, with a place for diasporans, with opportunity for citizenship on the continent, or if you prefer, dual citizenship. And so when we talk about food, clothing, and shelter, politics, economics, and culture, we have to understand that we have to be black nationalists and pan-Africanists. Black nationalists means that wherever we are on this continent or in Africa or in Europe, wherever we are, we should control the stores in our community. We should control the politics in our community. We should control the education in our community. And working with you here on this side with the Million Women Movement and the We Charge Genocide 21 Project, it would just be a compliment to the work that we're trying to do for all African people, so that we can have opportunity. Everybody else is going to the continent of Africa and taking the raw resources and bringing their so-called skills to the continent for themselves, to benefit themselves. But that's our homeland, and we need to wake up, because there's nothing here. There's no vital resources here in America for us. We need to control where we live because we're living here. But there's no vital resources here on this continent really for us. We got some fiat dollars that everybody's using currently, but they're trying to transition away from the fiat dollars. They're trying to transition into digital cryptocurrency and all of this other stuff. But America is trying now to put it, you know, America has already created a crypto bank, a digital bank, and they're trying to create a digital currency to get it, to put a head on this so that they could take, you know, manage it and take it over for white folks. Right? But we're saying that they could take all the digital dollars, they could take the USDA dollar, fiat dollar, and we could create our own dollar. The PASM is talking about the work that Gaddafi and others did. We wanted to create an African bank, wanting to create an African government that could effectively control, because we have all these different, at least 52, 53 nations on the continent, and they all trying to struggling with trying to put money into education or whatever, but if we pool our resources, we'll be much more effective, we'll be much more stronger there and here. We'd have something, for instance, happen to one of our young people to get hit, killed. Now we're protected by a government of us that loves us if we are successful in this movement. And so we want to work with you and the Million Women March movement here to bring Africans together in a coalition of forces to create an African government that speaks for us, that protects us, and that would enable us, as Dr. Jeffrey says, to have a real African renaissance and a vision for the future.
Well, my brother, I certainly look forward to talking with you more about that. I am familiar with the organization, and I have to be very honest and say that I have felt very offended by many of the groups and organizations over the years, because while it's so important that we embrace and safeguard our history in terms of antiquity, what about safeguarding our history that's right here and right now? And so the Million Woman March, as many know, is the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever. But yet, we're never invited. And no, we didn't come one day. I've remained consistent for two decades. We've had to wait until we're over 14 years. So my point is, by the various people here in the U.S., we are never embraced. We are never, so my point is, other people see what we do to each other and therefore feel that it's very easy for them to do what they do, because we won't even embrace and uphold the stuff that's right in our midst today.
Yeah.
So I have to say
I agree.
You know, I mean, this is real stuff. This is real stuff, you know. And again, I say to sisters, white women wanted to take the Million Woman March because they saw that black women didn't give a damn. And we're going to have to deal with that. Because it's very dangerous. Very dangerous. And these young sisters are looking for us. And this is why now, bringing the Million Woman March forward, we're like, yo, we've got to change this paradigm, like, right now. Because I've waited long enough, and unfortunately, our black women's organizations are one of them corporations. The funding, in fact, Goldman Sachs just put out over $1 billion for black women, to support black women, because they seized the time to use us because we would not embrace what we had. So what they did when they realized they were under attack because they were doing so much foul stuff that the government started fining them and start, you know, charging them, they then used black women to clean up their stuff. And we let them do that. So you got black women running around talking about, Goldman Sachs, because they can make money for their businesses and their programs, which we could have been done if, in fact, there was some appreciation for our history as there is for others. You see? But
I say, Mama.
But I had to say that because, you know, it is what it is. But this is family. I want y'all to come back next week. I definitely want us to talk more about what happens on Saturday for next week. I'm going to connect you all tomorrow with Brother Siddiqui. He's a bad dude when it comes to Boston. He knows all the folks up there in Boston. And so I'm going to connect you with him, and I'm sure he will be able to get, you know, some folks to do whatever y'all need to do while you're in Boston next week. Is that cool?
Yes, please forward my phone number to the brother that you're mentioning, because we actually need to talk to him as soon as possible, because we'll be there this Friday.
Okay, cool. I will connect you all tomorrow.
I don't know if you need our contact. Brother Imhotep already mentioned the Center for Pan-African Studies. I don't know if you need our contact, but Brother Dennis has been coming out of his own pocket. We have another Brother Enoch that's from L.A. who puts together, he's a member of ASCAC. He puts together magnificent timelines, visual timelines, showing you exactly who was in control of what periods of Egypt and what they created. But they've been coming out of their own pockets to make these trips to the different locations to be there. I myself has been struggling because they want me to come to Boston, but I honestly I'm not working. So, you know, I do little odd gigs here and there until I find something that I can really make an economic living from. So I don't have the resources to go. But if folks want me to go, folks are going to have to contribute in some kind of way. And I really want to go, but, you know, like I said, I don't have the resources. I just put it like that. So if you want to see me,
let me see if we can connect with Brother Siddiqui because, you know, he knows if there's resources, he will know. And I'm almost sure that, you know, he'll be able to help in some kind of way. So for tomorrow, I'm going to see if we can do maybe a conference call or something like that because this is doable. And you know, we need to do this. So look for my contact you tomorrow, either text or call. I'm going to contact Brother Siddiqui in the morning to see when he's available, and I'm sure we're going to work something out.
All right now. Family, I just want to say
something. Make sure you're in a quiet place because it's very distracting when you're trying to have a dialogue.
All right, we'll do, sisters. I'm driving right now, so I apologize for that. But
next week you know you're going to come on, so please be in a quiet place because what happens, your phone picks up everything, and it comes right through the airwaves, and people are listening, but it's kind of distracting to try to hear what you're saying because we want to hear what you're saying. We want to hear it clearly, but it's a little difficult when we have these background noises.
I see. Do you want us to share any contact info or anything, or just are we good with this?
Yeah, sure. If you want people to contact you, absolutely. Yep, go ahead.
So,
yep,
so
my name
for
is
myself,
Denny
you can reach me. Go ahead.
No, finish what you're saying, brother.
No, go ahead. You were giving your contact. Go ahead, brother.
Well, my name is Dennis Boatwright. Is known as Imhotep. You can reach me at 313-397-8159 or go to www.centerforpanafricanstudies.org where you'll get all the information about Hawass and other news that's related to people of African descent.
You can reach me through the same contact. My name is Sister Nubia. You can reach me through Dennis Boatwright's contact as well as his cell, because I am working closely with Brother Boatwright, and he will let me know if people would like to speak to Sister Nubia, who is
okay, we couldn't
cultural
hear
scientist.
Okay. So
Let me try again. This is Sister Nubia. Can you hear me better? This is Sister Nubia. You can reach me through Pan-African Studies contact through Brother Dennis Boatwright. And if you have any questions, I am a cultural scientist, also known as an archaeologist. I study in Belize, Kush, as well as I do underwater archaeology in the Caribbean. So I'm still studying the Olmec civilization, which I'll be doing some archaeology with the Maya in a couple of weeks. So if you'd like to contact me, please contact me.
Okay, yeah, it's startling. It's hard to hear you, sister. So listen, let's do this. We're going to get you all back next week, so make sure you put it on your schedule so that you will be in a place where we can hear you clearly. And sister, my sister Keisha just texted me. She wants you to be on her radio program soon, Thorough Black Talk. So when we connect, I'll make sure you get her information.
Right.
And, see, that's what we do. That's what we do. We make sure that we connect the black dots. And so, again, you know, that's the way we have to do it. We have to make sure that we can connect people and get these things done. So she just texted me and said that she definitely wants to, you know, get you on her program. All right, family, listen, we got to close this segment out. Go ahead.
Just finally, my contact, if you want to reach me, is 917-561-3581. Mm-hmm. That's 917-561-3581. Family, I want you to believe in yourself and the righteousness and victory of your struggle. The victory is ours. All we have to do is claim it. Our ancestors already paid in the blood and sacrifice to make it happen. Believe in yourself, family. We are the leaders we've been looking for. I love you. And as one of our elders said, there ain't a damn thing you could do about it.
No, that's right. All right, family. Listen, we thank you all, and we look forward to have you back next week. Part two. Give thanks. All right, family. Good listen, thanks. We're going to move right along real quick here. Brother Kofi, if you hear me, you need to press 1 because I can't tell where you are. I need to see you, and you can press 1, and then that way I will. All right, because that's who we're waiting for now. We want to talk to Brother Kofi, who, of course, is representing the Black United Front, the National Black United Front, and he's been patient, and we thank him for that. You know, the history of the Black United Front, believe it or not, a lot of people are not familiar with it. And even though they've heard Brother Malcolm often, because, you know, people definitely continue to listen to Brother Malcolm's speeches and information and messages, and many times, in many instances, you heard him say that we have to have a Black United Front. Well, there is one. In fact, I used to be, when I was in college, I used to be a member as a student of the Philly United Front. Unfortunately, I don't think sold out, but while they was doing it, it was wonderful. Anyway, let's go to our live line, and let's talk with our brother, Kofi Tahakra. And it's really been a couple of years since we've been in touch, but it's so good to have him with us now. Hey, Brother Kofi, how you be?
Black Power, Santa Sana, thank you so much for the opportunity to come on the show and dialogue with you and all of the sisters and brothers that are listening in the audience. We've been, it's like 115 degrees down here in Houston, sister. So we work it. We work it.
No, that's right. Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. I haven't talked to you in a long time.
yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So before we go into the event, the assembly that's coming up, let's get a little history lesson. Tell us about the National Black United Front, please.
Yeah, well, I thought your piece was excellent when, you know, Malcolm talks about, he said, we need a united Black Front. Brother Egun ancestor Kwame Ture, he said, you know, we need a Black United Front. And it's my understanding that many times across the country that there will be united fronts formed, but oftentimes they may be around crisis situations, right? Cops kill somebody or something, and then we're able to set aside some of our ideological, theological, sociological differences and say, this is so important, we will come together. So people in that 70s era will form Black United Fronts in different places. In 78, 79, the sisters and brothers in New York began a Black United Front, and then they made a call for a national organization. So the founding convention was held in 1980 in Brooklyn, New York, at the old Armory there. And people like the Reverend Herbert Daughtry, who was the first chairperson, who is still alive, out of the House of the Lord Church in Brooklyn. Baba Jitu Weyusi, out of the East Organization, as one of the primary organizers, and many other sisters and brothers that I may not have known, made that call. People came together. They struggled around a lot of different outlooks and perspectives on our movement, was able to come back and ratify a basic constitution in 1981. And we had chapters around the country, as you stated before, in different cities in New York particularly, they were organizing around police terrorism, brutality, and misconduct. That was one of the things that have pushed sisters and brothers together to organize. And over this 44 years we're talking about, so there's a lot of history of engagement on an international level in the Free Azania movement, anti-apartheid movement, the New Jewels movement, the Southern African liberation movements, the doing humanitarian aid in Grenada, Haiti, Rwanda, different places, nationally organizing and mobilizing around a number of different issues. So the servantship that we had in the beginning with Reverend Daughtry, then Reverend Daughtry was the national chairperson from 1980 to 85. Brother Dr. Conrad Worrell out of Chicago was the chairman from 85 to 2009. And under his servantship, then also we did the We Charge Genocide campaign around the CIA crack cocaine piece, the Indaba around reparations and other issues and what have you. Fortunately, I'm based in Houston, and we've had a chapter since the beginning, and we were able to be able to transition from some of those original people that started to younger, newer people who came within the organization. And then I had the privilege and honor now to be the national chairperson. So it's been one hell of a ride, you know. a real challenge, because we see, like, we're financially independent, meaning like we're not looking for money from outside. We're funded by ourselves, we're funded by our community and what have you. And some things through natural attrition, people getting older, people becoming ancestors, people doing changes and what have you. But we basically been organizing around those principles of Black power, self-determination, self-reliance, and what have you. And myself, I've been in the organization since about 1991. And I was a youth then, and I can't believe it's been this long for myself. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I look back and I say, wow, that was, I can't, you know, in my mind, I'm still 25 or 30, but not in reality. Yeah.
All right. You know, here in
and
Philly.
And the Media Woman March. Let me say this. I got to say this. I'm going to call up the spirit of my personal egg womb, my mother. See, I'm born and raised in Washington, D.C., right? So my mother, she's egg womb, Joan Penn. She organized people out of D.C. and was at the Media Woman March. And I still have on one of my altars, like one of the headbands, I think, some of the paraphernalia, like a buttons and a paraphernalia that she had. And my mother was a church-going sister, hell of an organizer, right? And she was very, very proud and pleased to be in attendance there at the Million Woman March.
I
say to that.
I know that's right, brother. Asante Sana. You know, it's been like, it's just been a serious kind of situation over the years to not only maintain, but to bring things forward. So to hear stories like that is just, you know, lets me know that, hey, you know, I did the right thing to continue to struggle and make sure that people were not able to dismiss and do what they wanted to do, which was to try to exploit and really rape us. I was able to prevent that from happening, but it was at a cost, I can tell you. So to hear that definitely reaffirms that, you know, it was definitely the right thing and the best thing to do. With that said, and we're going to go into, you know, the event that's coming up, the program that's coming up, rather. What we're working on, Brother Kofi, is, and we're saying this to our people as we proceed, for next year, we want to do a traveling kind of exhibit And so we're asking sisters and brothers, if you have an extra Million Woman March something, particularly from 97, but from any of our other events, we're trying to get a collection. Because, again, we want to have our own kind of Black Women's, National Black Women's Museum. But we work, we're starting with Million Woman March Day. Because, again, we got to start instant. This is what Baba, I don't know if you knew Baba Battle, Reedman Battle. He was one of the president generals for the UNIA.
I know the name, but I did not know him.
He was one of my elders, and he impressed upon me very strongly. He said, daughter, you've got to institutionalize your work. You see? And so I paid attention to that, and I heed to that. And so now one of our missions is to literally build institutions, and that means physical places where people can come, our people can come for arts and culture. You know, and I know you have the Shake Center there. So with that said, tell us about what's going to happen with commemorating the founding of the Black United Front.
Well, sister, we also have our own facility here, the National Black United Front. Quick story about it that in 95, brothers say, you know, we were meeting in donated space. We started meeting from the Shape Community Center, meeting in donated space. So we're going to get our own facility. We wound up working with the Black Bank here, and we got a property, which is like a big house, like 3,500 square feet in the Third Ward community. But it had not been lived in for like 10 years. It was said to be a so-called crack house. So we spent 2 years, the members of MBUF, working on the weekends and in the evening and renovated that facility and opened it up in 1997. And that is a place that is a meeting space. It's a two-story facility. It's a meeting space. It's a place where we do some of our programming out of that we do. But also we've done a lot of humanitarian aid, like after Katrina, after Harvey, where people were looking for alternatives other than these European relief and aid agencies. We convert the whole facility into a storage and distribution center and those type of things. And through this is a small group of activists and organizers without resources from anybody else. When we talk about fighting gentrification and what have you, these brothers and sisters have been so committed to the independence of our own space. We had a mortgage on it, and it took us 16 years, but we paid that mortgage off in 2011 on that space.
Oh, gosh.
By saying, all right, how much you got, Brother Kofi? How much you got, Brother Omar Wiley? How much you got, Sister Sister Empress Filet? Doing community fundraisers and what have you. And that's been a part of the, you know, that's like a challenge. We've gone through legal challenges and tax challenges and everything just to hold on to that independent space that flies the colors that you well know, like Garvey said, the red, black, and green. We got the Sundiata Kole Shaka Sankofa Self-Determination Community Garden there. We do our Feed the Hood project there. We do, we don't have it operational now, but we've had an African Center Saturday School. Other groups are able to use it. And the Shape Center has been around 54 years. And that is like the platinum standard of Pan-African institutions serving our people in Houston and in the state of Texas. And they're great allies of ours, only a few blocks away from us. So that's been a part of that challenge, you know, of, you know, when you're in a self-sufficient organization, I don't like to use the word volunteer, but self-sufficient, then people
that's
come and go. People
That's
come
right.
and go. Somebody might come in and do great work, but they might move. Or there might be a conflict, or there might be death in the family or health or anything. But all the while, we have to meet those responsibilities while we're fighting the death penalty here in Texas with Shaka Sankofa. While we're dealing with, while we were in Jasper, Texas, when they murdered our brother James Byrd. But we're doing those things, or Sandra Bland, right outside of Houston, right? Or George Floyd, who's from Houston. And I know every city has a list where the police terrorists or racist terrorists have murdered our people. This is the type of group we are, but we were maintained and held on to that facility and still fight 20-some years later. So we got a, you know, like an independent space here. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but coming up in right outside of Pittsburgh is our 44th National Convention, July the 7th through the 9th. We'll be in McKeesport, and it's 3 days, kicks off on Friday evening. It is a free on Friday evening. It's a reception, and we're going to have Reverend Daughtry, who's 93.
Yes.
We want to call on the wisdom of this elder of what all of his experiences are. He's still, you know, able to travel and move around, and while he is, he's going to be giving a keynote to us about his experiences. What should we do? What has went wrong? What has went right? And what have you? We roll into Saturday where there are workshops. There is fees on Saturday where we're still dealing with the question of building unity and coalition building. And we'll have Reverend Daughtry as well as some other people sharing that particular experience. We have some youth that will be dealing with their ideas of self-determination. And then we'll close it out with the intergenerational communication and dialogue with the youth and some of the elders on Saturday during the daytime. And then Saturday night, we have our national banquet, and the keynote speaker there will be Brother Charles Barron. We also have our chairwoman out of Kansas City who will be there, Sister Shafika Small. We have our national vice chair of international affairs who will be giving a recorded message. She's in Africa, young sister, been there for 3 years in East Africa, giving us a report from the continent and other, you know, other people. And then finally, so that's Saturday, and that does, there is fees involved with that. And then finally on Sunday, we'll be at one of the parks there doing what we call spiritual cleansing, doing a spiritual ceremony to close out the 44th National Convention. So, and people can hit us on mbuff.net. All of this information is up there about the national convention.
Wow. Ashe, wow. This is what I'm talking about. And, you know, it's so interesting, Brother Kofi, because last October, what we did here in Philly, we literally took a building, you know, to make the point that we can no longer allow the city to have properties that the city owns sitting in our communities vacant. And this one particular building was vacant for 20 years. So we went in and took it. And so now we're fighting for it.
You know, that it's a tremendous lesson that I learned. See, I was kind of, you know, when they said we were going to get this building in rehab, I thought we were going to be doing something for a couple of months. I didn't realize it was going to take us 2 years. Then I didn't realize it was going to, all of the challenges and ups and downs that we face just to hold on to, you know, a piece of property. But it's been a great educational experience in independent institution building. We had a big fire in 2018 that destroyed a good portion of the building. But fortunately, because of the people's, the members' commitment, but also the community that we serve and our allies' commitment, we were able to rebuild the building. So it really looks beautiful now, you know.
Wow.
And it was completed in 2020 after the you know, in the midst of COVID and everything, but it was committed.
Right.
So Yeah, it's been a real educational experience for myself, as well as the members. Many of them now, we have an ancestral room there where people are memorialized. Mm-hmm. Some of those people, and I'm not exaggerating to say that we have people to give $20,000-$30,000 to keep that building over, you know, like, because they're committed. Say, oh, we got, you know, a big tax issue. We got a this, we got a that, we got a this. And the support of allies like the Shape Center, like the Nation of Islam. We here, Mosque 45 is tremendous in terms of support. So the Shrine of the Black Madonna is here.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous in terms of support. They used to have one of the biggest facilities in this part of the country. They still have a tremendous church and cultural center here in Houston as well.
I didn't know that. I'm familiar with the one in Detroit and it's another city, Atlanta, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had one there.
Bebe Ejiman, before his transition, he was living here. They had church, bookstore, cultural center, and then they had communal housing. They owned like a whole block on two different sides of the street and what have you. But that was some time ago, but they still have a good portion of that property. And many of those sisters and brothers, as you said, came from Detroit, you know.
Right.
So we worked through some of our ideological, theological differences to say what's most important here, you know. Or if we agree on 70% and we disagree on 30%, is the 30% a deal breaker? Or can we see where we can have coalition around the 70%? It ain't perfect or nothing like that. You know, we in Texas. And this the real deal, you know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know the brothers and sisters see the news and everything else, you know. But we in a situation, I think, that it's not perfect. It's not no utopia in terms of African unity or anything like that. But I think amongst many of us, we realize we all we got in this very, very hostile environment.
That's right. Yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah. Oh, Brother Kofi, I'm so glad to hear that. You know, you said something about the community, and when we took the building, we literally cut the lock off and put another lock on, put our lock on. But before we did that, we went in and started cleaning it, right? We did an assessment in terms of the damage or whatever, but we didn't start cleaning and so forth. So ultimately, the city came and took our lock off and put another lock on. But what it did, it positioned us to now go into negotiations. So we have a community. And, oh, by the way, the point I was making is when we did it, we had set up our tent right outside in front of the building. And we let the people see us, and we would give them information because they would start coming over and like, well, what y'all doing? What y'all doing? And we said, we can really take back this building. It used to be a library in our community, been closed for 20 years. I've been taking pictures of it to show people how it's deteriorating on the outside. So now we have to do something because we know that the city is really waiting for the developers to come in. And we're saying, no, that's not going to happen. So my point is, once the people saw us make that move, they started coming over to us and was like, what y'all doing? What you doing? We told them, and they were like, what? Yeah, I want to help. I want to be, you know.
Yes.
So you're right.
Yes.
You're right. By them seeing us. And then they start telling us the stories. One woman, you know, I've been living in this community for 23 years. I used to go to this, library. You know, and so so the point is, again, you're absolutely correct. When our people see us doing certain things, it tends to not only motivate them and strengthen them, but it creates the kind of dynamic and energy and synergy with one another. So, yes, absolutely. Wonderful. So, all right, family, listen, is there anything that's going to be happening virtually? Are there any sessions?
We still, Yeah, we still, if people check the website, we'll put that information up. We're still making the finalized decisions on that.
Okay.
Myself, okay. I'm like this. I'm like, the technology is great, and we've all been like kind of forced, you know, to learn it and be in it, and all of that's great. But then also, there's some things that we don't need to be broadcasting everywhere. You know, we got to get face to face. We got to get in the same room. You know. So,
right.
But at any rate, we will put it up. We haven't decided which parts may be virtual, but if people go to mbuff.net, that's where they can find all of the information. I would be remiss to say that the sister that we have holding it down is our national treasurer, Sister Lisa Quinn, who's been doing all of this organizing work there in Pittsburgh and right outside of Pittsburgh to help us with this 44th annual convention. And she's going to be she's in a strong position of servantship. So we're going there to support her and the work and look to learn from our sisters and brothers in Pennsylvania. We know that there's commonality in our struggle, whether it be here in the diaspora or on the continent, but also we don't like come in and think, oh, we know everything. We want to learn from the people and have a good interaction with the brothers and sisters in the whole state of Pennsylvania, particularly Pittsburgh and the surrounding areas. And I love, let me tell you this, it's been a long time since I've been there, but I love Philadelphia. Used to go on the north. Some of my people was on that north side, Lehigh and Bonsall.
Right.
Dobbins High School, check it out, you know. But that was way back in the day. Yeah.
Brother, listen, that's why I fight. One of the reasons why I fight so hard, because coming up in Philly, I mean, there was so much going on, and I learned so much. Going back to the Black United Front here in Philly, one of the co-chairs was a brother by the name of Representative David P. Richardson. Ever get the opportunity, family, Google on YouTube David P. Richardson, and it's only like one video that you're going to find, I believe, and it's him at a Mumia Abu-Jamal rally. And he starts off with saying something like, I'm a black man first, and I'm not afraid of these punk FOPs. That was Dave Richardson. And he was a state rep.
Okay.
But he was also the chairperson for the Black United Front. And so my point is, that's the kind of people that we had in this city. You know, you could wear all these different hats, but people would let you know, I'm a black man first, or I'm a black woman first, so don't get it confused, you know. We had that kind of clarity and that kind of representation. Mm-hmm. We don't have that here now. These are Negroes now.
Well, that's one of the things, Charles is going to be Charles Barron. He's on city council there. He was a state rep in New York, but that's one of the things he's going to be speaking about is the politics of liberation and how you don't have to be sold out to the Democratic Party. Or if we're going to engage in electoral politics, how you can still deliver for your people, still be, as he says, he's elected revolutionary, right, today. So, yeah, he's going to be dealing with that particular message on Saturday night. Yep.
Okay. Well, definitely keep us posted because, again, we agree that there's some sessions that next month we'll be doing the We Charge Genocide 21. And we have 21 areas of crimes against humanity as Queen Mother Moore Weekend. And so MWM has created our own pantheons or our own icons. And so Queen Mother Moore, we will now declare her as Saint Queen Mother Moore. Amy Jackson Garvey Day is July the 25th. Queen Mother Moore is July 27th. And so for that week, we'll be saluting them and beginning a process of installment into sainthood. We're doing that. Nobody has to tell us that, you know, we will determine who we want to recognize in a certain kind of way. So if other people can have saints, why can't we? And so we're going to prove that point. You know, it's not from a religious standpoint. It's from a revolutionary, evolutionary standpoint. So, you know, that's what we'll be doing.
I was talking to some younger people the other day, and it was they were, we talked about reparations, and I was you know, I was talking about Belinda Sutton and Callie House and Queen Mother Moore, and realizing that I'm the age that I was able to see Queen Mother Moore, right? At the big national gatherings or different things. I saw Queen Mother Moore, heard her speak several times. And just doing the educational piece about Queen Mother Moore and her role in the 60s, 70s, 80s, on into the 90s in the reparations movement, but realizing that some of the younger brothers and sisters, haven't had that experience. So
exactly.
And we write that's down with that self-determination. We decide who is holy, what is sacred, what is, you know, important, and how we choose to honor, acknowledge, and take on the legacies of some of them. You know, we have this big thing. I'll say this. One of the things that we do is the Sankofa Caravan to the Ancestors.
Yes, I remember. You remember you used to come on my other program.
Yeah. So that's 26 years now of that, from Houston to Galveston. Juneteenth, you know, where they said the man did the thing and what have you, where, you know, we're dealing with our African history, spirituality, and culture. So people come from all over the region, all over the world, really, to that. So that's something we've institutionalized. And it was Baba Small who was at the first one that we did, and he said, y'all need to keep doing this. And we wasn't even thinking, I wasn't even thinking about it like that, right? But but we did. We institutionalized that as a sacred holy day for ourselves, and it's taken on a life of its own. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, my brother, it is definitely good talking with you.
Absolutely.
I hope you can stay in touch this time because I'm going on a tour in August. I would love to come in and visit there. And, you know, bring the now Million Woman World March and the development of our universal movement. We've worked for the past decade bringing this thing forward. Mm-hmm. And so now we're ready to move accordingly. You know, again, earlier today we had a session to get people ready for our boots on the ground component now. And we mentioned how in 2010, the African Union declared that the decade for African women. And so the point is that many of our women here, and our people in general, but our women in something like that, most sisters here in the U.S. had no clue about anything like that. And so now, you know, we know that we have to connect with our sisters throughout the diaspora. So this is what we're now preparing to do, and we're looking for our brothers to support and to help in whatever way. So again, I'm making sure we get that information.
I guess, but you're getting it on record. I understand. Yes, sir.
That's right.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'll be sending you something officially because, again, it's very important that people can see that there is, if nothing else, some functional and operational unity that we are attempting and are actually practicing. And you mentioned it earlier when you said that, you know, at some point folks came together and realized that we ain't got to agree on everything. And anyway, that ain't going to happen anyway. But there's some areas that we can and must. And so even talking with our brothers earlier, you know, this is what we're now striving to do. So we're going to stay in touch. We got to do that. And I'm looking forward to seeing you when I come visit in Texas. By the way, the last time I was in Texas, I was glad to get out of there.
Okay. Where were you?
No white folks in Texas. Woo!
What did they say? Like Kwame said, the people told Dr. King, man, they were talking about Mississippi. He said, man, these white folks is mean down here. But get this. Texas got the most people of African descent of any state in the United States. Not percentage-wise, but raw number-wise. People are coming.
Wow.
Man, there's so many people from Philly and the East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, and around the world, they're coming here because of the cost of living, the space, and what have you. But, you know, we got to deal with this heat and these hurricanes. you know. But
there's a whole
bunch of people here from every place that you could think of. Yep. In tech, but it's very, very big, very spread out. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of saw that a little bit, but I'm telling you, the white folks, whoo, they off the hook.
Yeah.
They are off the hook. But anyway, thank you.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, and we will stay in touch. All right.
Oh, no doubt.
Black power.
No doubt. I remember to give thanks. Black power to you as well.
Yeah. All right,
family, listen. We have had a wonderful conversation tonight, a wonderful interaction. We're very, very thankful. To bring forward history and information is very, very important, as you all know. But it is also important that we now bring things forward. And so you will hear us talk more about MWWM and our Black United Front for our women. Oh, yeah, we listened to Brother Malcolm. And so in doing so, we kind of looked at what do we need to do, which is one of the reasons why I'm in the UN now, because Brother Malcolm went to the African Union. He didn't get to the UN, but he said we need to go to the UN. He said it several times, that we have to take our struggle beyond civil rights. So I'm doing what our ancestors said, whether people like it or not. Hint, hint. Sister Keisha, you know what I'm talking about. Because again, we have people who are haters, and you wouldn't necessarily know that they're really haters, but they are. But nevertheless, I tell them, go talk to Brother Malcolm, because he was the one who said we need to go there. And I kind of believe him. So anyway, family, we thank you all again. We are going to close this session out. We really appreciate your time, your effort, and we thank you all for spending this time with us. And so we will tomorrow be at the back at where we were today, which of course is owned by Osiris Set Society. We will be at the Nile Gardens again, and holding our session. There'll be a panel discussion for brothers to deal with health issues and other things. So listen, please support the MWWM. There's now membership. And if you have a business, take on an ad with us. That would be the really good thing to do. If you want more information, please email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can text me, 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. And tomorrow, again, we'll be at the Nile Garden from 3 to 7, I believe, this time. We're usually there from 2 to 6, but tomorrow we'll be there from 3 to 7. And again, we will be doing a town hall meeting of the focus on reparatory justice, as well as the business of Black business tomorrow. If you want to tune in with us on Zoom, again, you can email me or text me and I will send you the Zoom link, because we will be doing some of the portions on Zoom. All right, family, listen. Again, remember, Sister Keisha, Thorough Black Talk, every Thursday at 8 o'clock. And Brother Lee Robinson, Africa on the Move, of course, that is on Sunday at 7 o'clock. We have other affiliates that we'll be introducing you to. Of course, Brother Ray Ray. On Wednesday, every other Wednesday, we're looking at the Mackie Study Group, and that's on YouTube. So we'll keep you posted as we now grow and develop and move forward with not only bringing justice, but now real, sustainable, full emancipation. How about that, y'all? I think it's time. At any rate, till next time, we say Pomoja to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. Peace out, y'all.